This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio is Dan Jungst. He is a senior cloud strategist for a company called Red Hat. And I'd like to thank our sponsor. Today's sponsor is AT&T. Well, Dan, you got this German kind of a name, J-U-E-N-G-S-T. So maybe we should start off with your background and how to pronounce your name before we start talking about Red Hat. So what is your background, Dan?
Okay, thanks, John, and thanks for having me. It's great to be here. So my name is pronounced Jungst, as you said earlier, and it is a German word, but my background is actually a little more diverse. I was actually born in the Congo to my mom and dad that were Presbyterian missionaries, and then grew up in the South.
Ended up going to, you're as far from German as you can get, huh?
Exactly. And ended up going to Davidson College and then Georgia Tech for grad school and then into the technology world.
Oh, great. So how long have you been with Red Hat?
I've been with Red Hat going on 2 years now.
Yeah, and a whole lot's happened just in the last 2 months. In the last 2 years, lots happened, huh?
Absolutely. Red Hat is growing fast, and I think we've added, you know, probably 20% employee growth since I've been there.
Yeah, in 2 years. Yeah, it's incredible. It's just hard to believe. In the last few weeks, I've had all kinds of guests in and out of the studio here. We've talked about open source software. We talked about open data, open government, the open door policy. I mean, everything open in the world we've talked about. And I thought it would be good to bring in Red Hat and talk about, okay, well, what is your perspective on this? And where do you guys fit in this mix of open software and the open government and everything else? And I see over the years, Red Hat's been plugged in a lot of different agencies, both, you know, some of the spy agencies, some of the agencies we can't talk about, and some of the commercial agencies. And they've negotiated this whole cloud thing fairly well and grown exponentially. And so let's bring in Red Hat every now and then and say, well, where do you guys fit in and what's new with you and how do you define these terms? And what about the cloud? What is a private cloud? What's a public cloud? What's a hybrid cloud? And where do you see yourself fitting? Because I think a lot of my listeners may have bits and pieces of knowledge of Red Hat, but are real confused on it. Others know way more than maybe you do about Red Hat and give you chapter and verse about what Red Hat can do, it can't do, but I'd like to maybe open up the show to that. So tell us a little about Red Hat and its technology that it has and how it fits in with my listeners, the federal IT professionals, please.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, we're really excited about a lot of the trends that are happening in the public sector these days with the move to open source software and the move to cloud computing, because those are both things that Red Hat is deeply involved in. You know, Red Hat has really built a billion-dollar business around open source software. And the thing that we're probably most well known for is Linux, the Linux operating system, and which was an open source project, meaning that the community can see the code and contribute to the code. And then Red Hat packages it up and provides it to our customers with, you know, world-class support.
So there's Linux and Unix, maybe the big picture analysis for some listeners out there.
Right. So Unix is a operating system that runs servers and is, you know, very stable. Linux is a operating system that is very powerful as well and similar to Unix, but is an open source software project, meaning that the code is open and visible to everybody. You can see the source code. You can even make changes to it and contribute to it. And so it has a community around it that's driving the innovation, not just one company, you know, that's locked the software down for their purposes. But open source software builds on a whole community in terms of contributions. And Linux is, you know, built on that approach. And so that allows us to drive innovation in it and also reduces the cost to the end user customer.
So just to dispel some rumors, open government got nothing to do with open source, got nothing to do with open data. It's just open source is just a way to use collaboration to design a safe and flexible operating system or safe and flexible, I guess, be operating system, huh?
Yeah, operating systems, or there's a number of open source projects, you know, whether they're middleware or even end user applications. There's just a whole bunch of different stuff that's being developed in, with this open source model now. It's really taking off both in the commercial and the public sector space, and vendors are really latching on to this model because it helps them reduce their cost and their engineering efforts, but also drives innovation and builds the community around it.
I was following at RedHatGov, one of the Twitter handles that I follow, and cloud. I mean, many of us will be Red Hat Cloud Company because cloud. Now, I'll give you my little perspective on the federal government and the cloud, and you can tell me if I'm off base or not. A few years back, people in the government were just trying to define what the heck the cloud is. Okay, they got it defined. Maybe the smart people up at NIST kind of figured it out, and then the other people at NIST started defining, okay, how can we make it secure? Maybe, I don't know, 2010, 2011, they got it secure. Now it's 2013. Let's put the keys in the car and drive it. Now this is where they start using your product and services, that now they want to take and apply some of these cloud principles.
Yep, exactly. So as I said before, Red Hat is well known for the Linux operating system that we've built a 10-year business around, and that's really taken off, and it is pervasive across the government. What we're doing now is doing the same thing for cloud. We're applying the same approach, the open source model, to cloud computing software. And that involves a couple of different types of software, including infrastructure as a service platforms like OpenStack, you may have heard of. Red Hat is now the leading contributor to the OpenStack project, and we're rolling out OpenStack for our customers. And then platform as a service is a layer on top of that, and Red Hat has an open source project called OpenShift, which is a platform as a service layer as well.
So that's what OpenShift is now.
Yeah, OpenShift is a platform as a service which allows you to really automate and streamline application projects and application coding by providing a self-service stack to developers so that they can just click a button and begin writing applications. So infrastructure as a service, just by way of background, gets you compute resources on demand. And so that's the nature of cloud, is on demand and self-service and elastic, right? And infrastructure as a service will get you those compute resources, so machine images and CPU and RAM. Platform as a service actually gets you whole application stack, so the middleware, the databases, and all the tooling that's needed to write applications. So with a platform as a service such as OpenShift, all the developer needs to do is click a button, and then he can begin writing a Java app or a Ruby application and really focus on the code and not on the system administration details behind it.
Because you get hung up on that, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And so it saves a lot of time, drives efficiency, drives hardware efficiency as well, because you're in a multi-tenant platform, so you can get more leverage out of the hardware that you have.
You know, when I think of infrastructure of a service, I think of renting a car for the weekend or renting a house at the beach. And so renting the infrastructure for the platform, it's renting the services that allow me to develop and store code. Is that...
Exactly. So the platform as a service is really, allows the developers to kick off a project very quickly and easily. And so it allows them to spin up and down application projects, right? So they want to just prototype some code. As you said, they're essentially the renting model. They can rent the JBoss application server, write their code, and then if they don't need it, they can throw it away. So it's that self-service, that elastic, that on-demand nature of cloud, but just for application stacks.
So JBoss just works with Java, and it's a cross-platform application server that you can spin up with platform as a server, spin it down. That's what the developers, that's a phrase they use, developers I work with. Spin this up and spin this down, huh?
Exactly. So, the OpenShift platform that Red Hat has built is built on Red Hat technologies. So it includes the Red Hat Enterprise Linux operating system inside it. So it's got, world-class security that we've been working on for 10 years, with our partners like the NSA. To build the security and the multi-tenancy into the operating system. And then it's also got the JBoss middleware, so the JBoss application server as well. But it also supports other programming languages such as Ruby and PHP and Python and others that customers are interested in.
Yeah, so Davidson College, is that North Carolina or Georgia?
Davidson College is in North Carolina.
And so that's where Red Hat's based too. Isn't it? Red Hat have a big office down there?
It is. It's headquartered in Raleigh, North Carolina.
I'm connecting the dots here. Finally, it's John. My IQ is like in two digits now, and I'm connecting the dots. Oh, I get it now. It's like a North Carolina. Everyone wants to go to North Carolina. I guess it's a great place to be. A big growth there.
The Research Triangle area is a beautiful area, I tell you.
And so what happens is those colleges are attract smart people, and they say, I want to stay. And they go knock on Red Hat's door and go, hey, you want to use my smarts? And Red Hat goes, come on down, huh?
Yep, absolutely.
I get the connection here. Let's take a little break. When we get back, I want to maybe position Red Hat a little bit differently. What about on the desktop? Is that fit in this discussion at all? Or the desktop is old school? No one's even talking about desktop and operating systems. It's about mobile. If it's about mobile, then how's it fit in with mobile? And then take this discussion and move from the cloud to defining a public cloud and maybe a hybrid cloud. And is that the fog? Is that a hybrid cloud? We'll figure out more about what a hybrid cloud is and how it has impact for my federal listeners. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dan Jungst. He's a senior cloud strategist for Red Hat. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dan Jungst. He's a senior cloud strategist for Red Hat, and we're talking about open source software and Linux and Unix and all kinds of distributions. We've spent the last few weeks talking about open government, open data. I figure we got to talk about open source now in this segment here. I have one question for you, Dan. And in the break, I was telling you that I was at a trade show a few years back, and someone was carrying around this big old Penguin thing and handed it to me and said, "Well, you know, this is the operating system for your desktop." And I think that that's been a big shift. It's been a tectonic shift in this argument over the years, hasn't it? So I think the argument over, yes, Linux should be your desktop, it's really not the argument to have anymore, is it?
Yeah, it's there's certainly a great use case for Linux on the desktop, on laptops or PC hardware. But what we really see is the operating system of the desktop is really becoming irrelevant, right? It's really becoming the applications that people are interested in. And those applications are almost all moving towards, a web interface or a browser interface, right? With HTML5 and responsive application designs, the applications will scale to whatever form factor the device that they're showing it on has. So whether it's a tablet or a mobile phone or a PC or a Mac or a Linux, laptop, they all can serve these applications, and it's really these end user applications that are the thing that's of interest. Where they're often referred to as systems of engagement. So instead of the systems of record, which are the big applications back in the data center on the server, right, holding all the data, the systems of engagement are the applications that are accessing that data and providing it to the users who can actually do something meaningful with it, right? So these web applications on mobile or tablets, that's really where we see it going.
It's almost like arguing about floppy drives today. Well, it's not relevant anymore. Or arguing about CDs, which is not relevant. It's not even the point anymore.
Yep.
I read Network World, and there was a guy writing about his 4-year-old son, and his 4-year or 5-year-old son. Some they got to the point they're articulate, and they said, "Well, Dad, what's a browser?" His whole experience was in the browser world. He thought that was the experience, was the browser experience. It had no idea about desktops and operating systems and this different type. And that's the concept, I
that's
think.
Right.
Now it's like, well, I'm not going to worry about all that nonsense there, but I want to get this information, this application.
Yep. They live on the kids today live on the internet, and they live in the browser, and they don't really know a whole lot outside of it.
So this is probably a silly argument about desktop, what's relevant, what's not relevant on the desktop, because, that's all changing pretty quickly. In the first block, you used the term and tossed it out there called middleware, and there's some people that understand that. Maybe you can define it and tell me where this fits in with Red Hat.
Okay. Yeah, so when you're developing applications, and again, I keep going back to the fact that it's the application that's the key thing, right? The application is what you want to provide to your users. So when you're developing applications, you have to write a code, and that code runs on the computer. So originally, back in the day, we would write assembly language programs or C programs or C++, and that code had to be compiled into something the machine could read. Well, middleware is just pieces of software that actually make it easier. So the Java application server, such as a JBoss application server, is a piece of middleware that makes it easier to write the code. You can actually write the code more in terms of business logic and more and make it more meaningful instead of writing the very low level assembly level code. So so when we talk about middleware, it's really just other pieces of software that are used to make writing applications easier, and that can be application servers like the Java application servers. It can even be databases or message buses that are used for communicating between applications, things like that.
So if we jump into the Wayback Machine and go back to 2002, Middleware may have a similar type definition, but that may be focused more on larger applications. And today, what I see more and more people looking is not what they call, you know, I guess a fat client, but more of a thin client application. So it's just, you know, everything's changed from a desktop to something portable, from a larger application to maybe a smaller, more flexible application. It's changing that way, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, that's true. And that actually makes the middleware more important because the middleware has to do more of the work then, right? If you're just running a thin application in a browser, then that's actually talking to the application server or the piece of middleware that has to do a lot of the number crunching and process the data that it's getting from the databases.
My kids and I always joke, I sometimes watch the news, and the news guy is Doug Kammerer. And my kids say, no one watches TV anymore, Dad. That's crazy. And it's they all get their information from, you know, from handheld devices and from the cloud. And then we get to talking about the cloud and defining the cloud. And I tell my kids what the cloud is. And they go, we don't care. We want to know this stuff. And they don't care about a public cloud, a private cloud, or a hybrid cloud. So for the purposes of our discussion today, how would Red Hat define a hybrid cloud? And from a federal perspective, is that good or bad? Or is that too risky for a security perspective? Or where does this hybrid cloud fit in?
Okay, so that's a great question. You know, and we think that hybrid is actually very important when you're talking about cloud computing. So in the cloud computing context, some of the basic types that people have talked about in the past are, you know, public cloud, and private cloud. And public cloud is something that's running out in the public environment, you know, out on the internet, such as Amazon Web Services EC2 environment is probably the biggest public cloud that's out there, right? So you can get resources on the public cloud. You can run servers out there. You can run applications out there. But it's you know, it's not behind your firewall. It's not secure within your data center. So a private cloud would be just something that's just that. It's still a cloud environment, has all the attributes of cloud in terms of self-service and elasticity and on-demand nature, but it's running, you know, within your control. It's either running within your data center, so strictly behind your firewalls, or it's running, you know, in your own very carefully controlled, you know, private cloud with maybe buried within a public cloud space, right? So it's something where you've set up VPN access and you have, you know, strict security. So those two types of cloud.
So at one end we have the public, everyone can hit it. The other one, it's very, very tightly controlled. And now the middle is.
Right. So hybrid. So we think that both things are neat and there's definitely use cases for both. But what we think is the place that people ought to begin to think about and move to is a hybrid approach where you can leverage both, right? So you can leverage cloud services from the public cloud in order to augment what you're doing in your private cloud. So maybe you want to do a bunch of development and test on certain applications, and it's not classified data. You can do that out in the public cloud. So I believe the Navy CIO just introduced the notion of it's okay to run unclassified applications and have unclassified data out on the public cloud. So leverage that, but then still have your private cloud implementations, you know, for running your secure applications and for securing your data. And the hybrid nature is when you're able to move between the two, right? Move applications or move data between the two in a secure way. And with Red Hat, we have technologies that can allow you to do that. So the OpenShift platform is something that the Defense Information Services Agency is implementing. And they are, you know, as you know, a service provider to other Department of Defense agencies.
And they better be secure.
That's right. That's right. So their model, they're really taking that hybrid model to heart, right? The Army and other departments are, you know, running their own, you know, private clouds, but then they're leveraging the DISA cloud as kind of, you know, the public or the hybrid, you know, nature of that. And so they're able to expand out to that. So this approach of, you know, using hybrid to allow you to enable and leverage both public and kind of private implementations, and something that we call open hybrid cloud, because it gives you the openness and allows you to you know, get the most out of your resources.
Now, just from my perspective, if you host a SharePoint server on Amazon, you can probably plug that in and do a cookie cutter checklist. On the other hand, if you have a private cloud, you probably have a cookie cutter checklist of that. With a hybrid cloud or even open hybrid cloud, it seems like everyone's going to be unique and different. And so maybe more difficult, almost like maybe a custom suit versus a suit off the rack or custom made car. Is it really that unique and different, or can you use standard tools on that?
Well, you can use standard tools or tools that are built in order to interface with the different types of clouds, right? So that's when cloud management platforms come into play. So a cloud management platform is a set of tooling that allows you to construct a hybrid cloud out of both private cloud resources and public cloud resources. And then the cloud management platform will treat that as one big cloud. And so then you can move the workloads back and forth. So Red Hat has a product called CloudForms, and that's just what it does.
But it's not middleware. It's just it's managing clouds.
It's a cloud management platform, right? Allowing you to use resources in the public cloud, use resources in your virtualized environment, use resources in your private cloud, but treat them all together as one thing.
You know, I intentionally use a sample of a Microsoft product on Amazon Web Services because it gets me kind of confusing with virtualization like VMware and Microsoft, Citrix, and you folks have virtualization. And all of a sudden, your virtual servers on different clouds, and then you have to use another tool to manage them. It seems to be the complexity here is getting higher and higher. And once it comes to security on hybrid clouds, you can say, well, geez, this gets to me almost the point where it's difficult to implement.
Yeah, and that's another aspect of our open hybrid cloud approach, and what we believe about openness is the use of open APIs, right, and open standards. So if you build your clouds using open standards and APIs that are well defined and open, then you're going to be able to use tooling that's going to be able to manage those things. So it won't be too complex.
Dan, we got to take a break. We'll come back, talk more about Red Hat. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Dan Jungst, Senior Cloud Strategist for Red Hat. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Dan Jungst, who is a Senior Cloud Strategist for Red Hat. We're just trying to figure out where Red Hat fits for federal IT professionals and talk about some terms that you may know, you may not know, or maybe kind of think you know and not correct. And here's a little term we talked about in the break, and I've been reading this, and I'm thinking, what the heck is what? So we talked about managing different types of clouds, private clouds, hybrid clouds. So what is a cloud broker? Is that a service? Is it a concept? So what does that mean to you, that whole concept of a cloud broker?
So, yeah, that's a great question. A cloud broker, we view as something that is going to be able to manage leveraging resources from both public cloud and private cloud, and maybe multiple different public clouds. So be just kind of consolidating and coordinating all of that resource management. And our view is that, really the IT departments are going to need to become those cloud brokers in a way, because they will be able to take advantage of public cloud services, offer them to the, to the business or the organization. And so they become the broker then in doing that, right? They need to bring in those public cloud services, whether it's a software as a service application or it's leveraging, development and test out in the public cloud. And they broker that to the internal constituents within the mission, within the agency or the organization.
When I think of brokers, I think of people who represent buyers and sellers and select the best real estate for someone. And so would a cloud broker, would they select the technology? Would they say, okay, now for this application, we're going to use company A's virtualization, but we're going to host it on company B's server because of security implications on that. Would that be a decision that IT people would make, or where would that take place? Is that a project manager's decision?
Absolutely. That would be one of the key decisions that the IT department needs to make, right? And they need to provide ultimately services to the organization, services to the agency. And so, where they get those services and what they leverage to provide those services is really up to them. They need to make the decisions. Are they going to leverage the public cloud? Are they going to build a hybrid cloud, leveraging both private and public? And so they become that broker in order to do that.
Now, if an organization like DISA, and DISA handles a lot of military stuff, so they have to be very careful. If they have engaged the hybrid cloud, and they have to worry about on-premises security, they have to worry about applications, they have to worry about mobile devices, it seems like it's for a civilian agency, they can say, well, if DISA did it, we could probably maybe take a look at it as well, because DISA has like an app store, don't they? I mean, this is conceptually difficult for me to think of.
That's right. Yep. They're really quite innovative in what they're doing with cloud.
Yeah, great. I have a blog. If you want to read my blog, just go to Google, type in John Gilroy blog. Do you have your own blog? Is there a blog you read? Is there something that maybe our listeners could read to connect better with Red Hat?
Yeah, absolutely. So, there's a number of blogs written by Red Hat folks. And the OpenShift project, which I'm intimately involved with, has its own set of blogs on OpenShift.com. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite blogs is by one of my peers, Gunnar Hellickson. His blog is A technology job is no excuse.com. And he's always quite entertaining. And I have my own blog at pitchingmoment.com. Huh. Don't ask me where the name came from. But
And so there's a couple of ways to fall. You know, I deal with students all the time, and everyone, they get information so differently, you know. Some just read blogs, some tweet, and some don't tweet, and some have specific online magazines. Some go to topics on Reddit. It's just amazing how different ways people get information on your company. I get information from going to trade shows. I was at a trade show 2 days ago, and it was about mobile apps for healthcare IT. And so I had my healthcare IT hat on, and I had my mobile hat on, and I'm walking through the exhibitors, and there was Red Hat. And so I walked with the Red Hat and said, well, you guys don't write apps, do you? I mean, you're not involved in healthcare IT. And they said, check, check. Yes, we are. And they said, yeah, we're the backbone for all this stuff, John. You see all this stuff? Well, open up the door and look behind the curtains. There's Red Hat.
That's right. Yeah. Whether it's, you know, the middleware, the JBoss family middleware that's being leveraged for those applications, or the Red Hat Enterprise Linux operating system underneath, or even the cloud, you know, technologies that we're providing that really do provide the backbone for those mobile applications. Ultimately, you know, in my view, it is about the apps. That's what IT is really all about. And so applications are key, and being able to provide them quickly and easily and securely and robustly is key.
You know, when I'm with my colleagues, I joke that I was at a federal agency today because everyone had two cell phones and two iPads. and maybe they were, you know, one blue and one green, or the old red phone, the black phone or something. And when I'm in a commercial company, they have one. But the govies always seem to have two, because what's happening is the cloud is allowing for a lot of mobile apps like at Datapalooza and mobile. But the challenge, I guess, is how can you use clouds to deploy mobile apps in a secure environment? And I think there's some challenges that maybe the hybrid cloud may answer in this area.
Yeah, potentially it could. You know, the secure networks and secure clouds is definitely adds a challenging wrinkle to the whole IT landscape, right? And that's something that the public sector, the government space has to deal with uniquely. So being able to leverage, you know, different private cloud infrastructure for your secure environments is one of the key ways that you can do that.
So do you think this whole idea of mobile is going to have a big impact on Red Hat in the next few years, or are they going to have a mobile strategy, or is that just a part of the puzzle that's going to be included in some of your products?
Oh, I think you'll definitely see it coming out as you know, part of the strategy going forward. It's definitely a huge thing that's impacting IT in general. And so, you know, like Red Hat is now, you know, leading with open source cloud technologies with our infrastructure as a service with OpenStack and our platform as a service with OpenShift. You know, we'll be moving into the mobile space as well and providing a variety of things. And you can even, you know, envision a mobile backend as a service, you know, technology coming from Red Hat.
What organizations or what concepts or theories, what would OpenStack compete with? What would be a choice between OpenStack and X or nothing, or what would OpenStack compete with?
Yeah, so OpenStack is an open source project that can be leveraged to build infrastructure as a service clouds. So it competes with a number of things. There are other technology stacks that can be used to build similar clouds from other vendors, such as, you know, Citrix. And then it also, you know, you can think of it as competing even with some of the public cloud vendors as well. But it's really about the infrastructure as a service layer, which gives you those compute resources, right?
And the differentiator here is that OpenStack is all open source. Is that what the differentiator is?
That's right. It's one of the hottest open source projects right now. It was, you know, originally started by NASA, has contribution from, you know, a number of other vendors, Rackspace and IBM, as well as Red Hat. And Red Hat is now the leading contributor in the open source project for OpenStack. And so we're really excited about it. We, you know, really view being able to bring to OpenStack what we did for Linux, right? Really make it a viable platform that big enterprises, big organizations, big government agencies can build clouds on, knowing that it's open source and it's backed by a trusted company like Red Hat.
And there's got to be some training. I mean, 10 years ago, I wrote an article about people getting certified to use Red Hat. I mean, there's got to be some training and confidence involved in being able hire people or have people that know this technology as well. And that's one of the validations that Red Hat may bring to this whole project, I would think.
Absolutely. You know, our training and services organization is a big piece of our company. And we're going to be rolling out, you know, certification programs around cloud and around OpenStack and other Red Hat products.
There's something called STAX Stacks. Have you heard of that? Or I got that in my notes for preparing for the show. Is that anything to do with you folks?
Stacks. Mm-hmm. So Stacks is a a project that DISA is running, Defense Information Services Agency.
Oh, that's a connection.
And
it's
actually a platform as a service cloud that they've that they've built, and they are leveraging Red Hat's technologies to do it.
So that's the connection. STX. So it's just it's not an acronym, or it's just what they call it, huh?
Right. That's their name for their
platform
for their cloud.
As a service. So your product and platform as a service, who would they compete with? Who would be a choice that DISA may have looked at and wound up with you folks for Stacks?
So platform as a service is really interesting. It's a fairly young space, but there's a number of players that are kind of up and coming out there in it. There's a number of small players. There's a few other big companies that have jumped in. But a lot of the middleware vendors, such as the Java application server companies, have built what they call platforms as a service, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's really where the competition comes from, is from the middleware space.
That's interesting. That's good. Let's take a break. We can come back, talk more about maybe some of your personal technology choices, and then get out the crystal ball and see where Red Hat's going to head in the next couple of years. If you can predict that, I mean, how much more can you grow? You're probably going to run out of people to hire if you keep growing anymore. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Dang Jungst, Senior Cloud Strategist for Red Hat. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dan Jungst. He's a senior cloud strategist with Red Hat. We've been talking about clouds, public clouds, private clouds, hybrid clouds, security, all kinds of stuff. There are people who want to follow Red Hat on Twitter. And is there a handle they can use, Dan? Or what they used to follow Red Hat? At Red Hat Gov, is that what they would use?
Yeah, at Red Hat Gov is great. At OpenShift is a Twitter feed specific mm-hmm. to our platform as a service offering as well. My Twitter handle is at Dan Jungst, so DanJungst. And there's a number of our Red Hat family members also are active on Twitter.
And what's interesting about Red Hat is just not the members of family, in the Mid-Atlantic area or United States. I mean, there could be people listening to this podcast when there's snow on the ground in Uganda or Bangalore or Sao Paulo, Brazil. It's an international type community, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very much. It's a really interesting company and organization because it's, we're built around the open source community, right? Our whole business model is around open source software, and we invest a lot in open source projects for different types of technologies. What that means is that these open source projects often have people from around the world contributing to them. And then a lot of times we end up hiring those people into Red Hat. And so we may have people, remote workers, working in the Czech Republic or in Idaho or in Los Angeles, just all over the world. It's a really interesting community when we map out kind of where everybody actually lives that works for Red Hat.
Yeah, I've traveled all over the world. And I'll tell you what, the United States does not have a monopoly on brains. There's brains evenly distributed. There's brains in Paraguay. There's brains in Finland. There's brains in Idaho. And if you got a brain, then bring it on down. And this is an easy way to access it. And an easy way that these people like to access is it through Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. I'm always fascinated by people in different countries that follow me because I have so many different interviews, I guess. I have a Microsoft interview, a Red Hat interview, then I'll have a mobile interview, and all kinds of different people are trying to figure me out. And people are listening to you going, geez, Dan's kind of a mild-mannered guy. I wonder, technology. He's a Red Hat guy, so what kind of cell phone does he have? Really? Why with that? And so I got to ask you these 10 questions, Dan, that I ask everybody.
All right.
This is my nerdometer test to see if you are actually a card-carrying nerd or not.
Awesome.
So how old were you when you bought your first PC?
How old was I? I was probably about 30 years or old or so, 30, 32 maybe.
Interesting. But you've been using before then. And how old were you got your first cell phone?
About the same time frame, so I'd say 30, 32.
Okay. And do you have a personal Twitter feed? Yes, we have that.
Yeah.
And do you have a personal blog?
Yes, www.pitchingmoment.com.
Pitching Moment.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds like a baseball blog, but it's a pitching moment. And do you use any online personal backup services?
I use Dropbox essentially for that. I don't use any of the automated backup services today.
And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I'm using an iPhone 5.
I was going to circle Android. I was about to circle Android. iPhone, that's something. Number of apps on that?
I just checked it the other day. It was 176 apps.
Whew, that's a lot. Yeah.
I'm not sure what I do with them all. But,
and I used to ask if you have a tablet device. Now I ask how many tablet devices do you have in your home?
Good point. So we have two, Kindle and an iPad.
Good. And you active in any social networking sites?
Yeah, pretty active on LinkedIn and Facebook, you know, a little bit on some of the others, Tumblr and Pinterest occasionally and things like that.
And the last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
So right now I'm reading Tom Clancy's Threat Vector. And I was given the paper copy for my birthday, but now I'm reading it on my Kindle app on my iPhone. So, so I'd say both.
You know, I have this strange deal where I buy a hard copy book and keep it in my book. I carry it around until I read it because I know you're waiting for the dentist or an elevator or something. Right. You got to wait for something. And you go through it. And it's just, it's an old fashioned habit that I designed. I guess I could do it pretty easily with any device, but just it's, and I circle things and I show people. So it's old school that I am here. Red Hat's changed drastically the last 10 or 15 years. When I wrote about you initially, it was pretty much a small company, and they were certifying, you know, people who knew Red Hat technology, and I didn't really know what's going to happen. Now it seems to have exploded. I mean, where is Red Hat going to head in the next few years? Is there any way to know? Where do you think the company should head? Is it going to be all mobile, or is it going to be cloud, or where do you see it heading here, Dan?
Right. So, you know, Red Hat's really heading in a direction that, you know, we've already got a great foothold in, and that's just becoming a premier IT technology vendor, right? So we're certainly, you know, well known for the Linux operating system. We built a huge business around that. You know, Linux powers billions of transactions per day across all industries and in all countries. And now we're, you know, expanding on that. We're doing the same thing for cloud technologies. So we see cloud as certainly something that IT is moving in the direction of, and we want to help IT organizations be able to serve their constituents by providing them with the open source cloud technologies that they need to do that. And so, you know, we're really moving into that space, really providing a full stack of technologies to IT organizations so that they can, you know, run their whole business on trusted open source technologies.
And I think that's the, that's, as we say in radio, the phrase that pays. That's the summarizes the interview, is that there is not one magic silver bullet here. There's a whole wide range of services and technologies to use, and you have to examine what you want at the end of the day and then try to find out what is the right package for deploying a hybrid cloud. Maybe it's not the hybrid cloud you want to deploy. Well, maybe a different set of tools for a public cloud. Well, a different set of tools for your private cloud. I think that's the lesson here, is that we've covered so many different topics. It's, well, the whole Linux on desktop, well, that was 30 seconds in an hour interview, and there's just so many topics here with Red Hat, isn't it?
Yep, exactly. And one of the key philosophies at Red Hat, because we're open source based and we believe in open source software, is providing choice, right? Choice and giving our customers the choice to implement the technologies that they need in order to best serve, you know, their business.
As far as international development goes, what is the percentage of folks that contribute to something like Linux? I mean, is it certain areas of the country, certain countries that contribute more? This is just a, you know, I'm thinking about Red Hat and open source. Are there any certain areas that contribute more or less, or certain different types of applications? We know that on Wall Street, a lot of financial applications are running on Linux because it's so secure.
That's right.
And we can talk about the intelligence community before they drag me out of the studio here. But I get the sense that they use a lot of them for security reasons, but we can't say that. Yeah. Is that your sense too? Or
yeah, I mean, we get contributions from all over the place, especially when you're talking about the Linux and what they call the Linux kernel, right? There's code contributions made to that from all over the world, but certainly from a large part from the U.S. And you know, our government partners, the agencies and the departments that we work with that have invested in Red Hat technologies, they are contributing code as well. I think I mentioned earlier, the National Security Agency has, you know, contributed code into Linux that has helped make it more secure. And that's been a key benefit to everybody else that uses Linux and uses Red Hat Enterprise Linux in particular, in that they know that that's now trusted technology. It's got security mechanisms that are written by the NSA. So, you know, you can pretty well bet that it's going to be very trusted.
I think this would be difficult for a student, let's say, at Virginia Tech studying computer science, if they had you as a guest lecturer and you waltzed in there and you said, well, the most secure place in the world, the NSA, is contributing to an open source software. It doesn't make any sense. It does. Maybe you can explain that further. It's just that, well, it would seem that they want to keep everything secret. No, as a matter of fact, transparency would indicate that there may be some aspect of the code that someone else can see, that the transparency increases security, huh?
That's right. I mean, you can see the code that they've written, but by doing so, you can see that they've written code that, well, when it's running, is actually very secure, right? So the way that they've designed the code that they contributed makes the Linux operating system, when it's running in an environment, a secure operating system. And you can't break in and change their code in a running server.
Because if it's transparent, there are eyeballs all over the world that are watching and saying, whoa.
Right.
Can't, and there's something to be said for crowdsourcing and validating a lot of choices. And if it's a weak addition, everyone's going to know, aren't they? I mean, they're going to know.
Absolutely.
You can't hide.
Yeah, bad changes don't survive very long in an open source project.
And that's a surprise, too. We're going to have to end the interview here. We've talked about too many topics, everything from clouds to securing clouds and on-premise data centers and off-premise data centers. Maybe come back in a few months or down the road and talk more about mobile. I think it's a real key to understanding this whole idea of clouds and hybrid clouds and infrastructure and security. Mobile is just a so important topic for my listeners, for everyone out here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Dan Jungst, Senior Cloud Strategist for Red Hat. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, John. It was very fun.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.